Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
You're listening to the best of Catholic Connection with Teresa Tamio.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tamio, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tamio.
Interesting piece in the New York Post recently. Why is noting married people are happier and kids do better with married parents so controversial? And I thought it was an excellent piece, and it focused on a new book by our friend Brad Wilcox, and he's with us this morning. He is the professor and director of the National Marriage Project at the University of Virginia and the author of the new book, Get Married. And he lays out in the book and in much of his research over the years the benefits of marriage and family and what that means to people. And it's not coming at it from a religious perspective. It really is what the research has said over the years. Brad, great to talk to you again. So let's talk first of all about putting this book together. I imagine that it took a lot of work, but there is a lot of research out there to really support getting married, correct?
Yeah, Teresa, we're just seeing more and more evidence now, almost by the day. So there was a study in Chicago telling us the number one factor explaining why happiness is falling in America is that fewer and fewer Americans are tying the knot. So that's just kind of one of the, and there's another Gallup study kind of coming to a roughly similar conclusion, talking about happiness or well-being driven most by marriage, not by things like education and money. So a lot of Americans are under the misimpression that life's about money or work or, you know, schooling, but what we see in the data is that the number one predictor of happiness is either marriage oftentimes or especially a good marriage.
What's so interesting about this is I can attest to this because my husband and I have been married just over 40 years, and we thought when we got married, even though we got married in the Catholic Church, we really didn't think we had to do much work after that. And we found very quickly that our focus was wrong because we were focusing on just what you mentioned, money and success and career. And pretty soon things started to unravel and we're like, well, what's going on? The world is telling us one thing and why aren't we happy and why are we fighting so much? So you would think after a while that people would get a clue, but what it seems like they're so insistent in general on pushing back against what not only the research says, but if you look at personal experience, there's so many studies out there, Brad, showing how unhappy people are.
Yeah, I mean, as I kind of argue in the book, we are hardwired to connect, and yet there's so many forces out there that are basically pushing us to be, you know, disconnected. I think, obviously, most recently, it's sort of smartphones and social media, but there are these other factors that we just touched on, too, in the way in which our culture tends to kind of prioritize consumerism or careerism. And these are things, too, that really lead us to disconnect from our spouses and often from our children. So we're just kind of facing an uphill battle right now in recognizing and realizing that that which is most important is often that which is closest to us, and that sort of the plaudits of, of our colleagues at work or some random people on the Internet are not that important.
So in terms of your book, what does it show about the impact marriage has? Let's start with not only the couples. You mentioned that already in terms of the happiness factor. But what about children? What impact does it have on children?
Well, in looking at the data on marriage and kids, I mean, there's just tons of research showing that kids are more likely to flourish when they're raised by their unmarried parents. You know, they are, for instance, much less likely to be sad, much more likely to be steering clear of drugs and alcohol. But I think the most striking finding for me in this research for the book was that I found that young men who are raised apart from an intact married family, you know, apart from their married dad especially, were more likely to end up in jail or in prison than they were to graduate from college. And by contrast, young men raised by their own parents and their own intact biological home were about four times more likely to graduate from college than they were to spend time in prison or in jail. So it's just kind of an incredible connection between kind of family structure and flourishing kids, and in some ways especially flourishing young men.
We're talking with Brad Wilcox, professor and director of the National Marriage Project at the University of Virginia, about his book, his new book, Get Married. Now, you've been getting some pushback for this, and in this article that I mentioned from the New York Post, you're not the only one. When others have, other experts have talked about the really the good signs of marriage and what that means to society and children, the pushback is huge. For example, the article talks about Melissa Kearney, University of Maryland economist, who was warned by colleagues not to publish her recent book, The Two-Parent Privilege, How Americans Stopped Getting Married and Started Falling Behind. So those of you who are looking at the secular research and putting this out there are getting some pushback. And this is just so crazy upside down because, as I said, we're seeing more and more studies coming out about how lost children are. They have no hope. They're not happy. They're turning to drugs. The CDC just put out a report just recently showing how many young people are turning to alcohol and drugs because there is a huge sense of what? Of hopelessness. And we see about these studies on loneliness and everything else, and yet they don't want to hear it.
Yeah, I think that the issue here is really twofold. One is what I call the minus mindset, and that's about kind of this focus on, you know, doing things your own way, oftentimes with a career orientation, and family can be seen as an obstacle to that. But I think the other piece here is there's a kind of a progressive idea, what I call the family diversity myth, that every single kind of family form is equally valuable, that there's no particular value to marriage, and that all the kids need is love and money, and marriage has nothing to do with love and money. So those two different things, the modest mindset and then this family diversity myth, are, you know, two of the cultural factors that I think make it difficult to underline the importance of marriage and family for our kids.
Now, what about the issue of cohabitation? Because we see a lot of couples still choosing living together, even though there's a lot of research to show that that doesn't help if you're getting married. Those who live together have a less likelihood of the marriage succeeding. So what does your research show? Does your research add to that?
So I've got colleagues, Dr. Scott Stanley and Dr. Galena Rhodes at the University of Denver, have looked at this issue. What they find is that sort of the biggest risk when it comes to cohabitation is what's called sliding into a relationship rather than deciding to be together. And what they're seeing is a lot of couples say just kind of slide into intimacy, both sort of physical and emotional intimacy, and then just slide into kind of living together. They've never really been deliberate about kind of figuring out if they're a good fit for one another, if they've got common goals for a future. And it's kind of just, you know, moving in together without any kind of plan for marriage. It's the most risky for your future when it comes to both the quality of your marriage and the stability of your marriage. And by contrast, couples are much more kind of decisive. They're talking about common goals, making sure that they're on the same page, moving slowly, both physically and emotionally, towards marriage, are much more likely to be flourishing. So that's one piece of the evidence that I've seen recently on cohabitation. The other, I think, piece of evidence that's most striking is some work done by a professor at Stanford, just kind of showing that the more partners you have, cohabiting partners you have prior to marriage, the more likely you are to land in divorce court. So the bottom line here is that kind of taking a more deliberate approach to dating, to relationships, and moving more slowly, both physically and emotionally, looks like, you know, the most sensible strategy
right
when it comes to finding a mate.
Now, before we let you go, I know you have a class to teach, and thank you for joining us this morning. Really appreciate it. But it is amazing to me in the research that you pulled together. You're not going at this from a Catholic or an evangelical or a conservative perspective. You're just looking at the social science. And so they're still trying to label you as this uber conservative and claiming that you're trying to push these certain things out there. Some of the media articles that I've seen on your book, and we've had you on before. This isn't your first rodeo with dealing with this kind of thing from the culture. So what can we do to talk to people about this and get them to realize that the natural law, actually, if we're having a conversation with a person of faith, obviously, this supports what we teach in our faith. But what would you suggest to have try to have a level-headed conversation about this with someone before we let you go, Brad?
Yeah, I think the point that I make is just to sort of point to some, you know, of our older thinkers who are not Christian, not Catholic, you know, like Aristotle, who said that we're social animals, and to kind of build our discussion around this whole issue of sort of marriage and family with the recognition that we're hardwired to connect, and that most cultures and contexts have managed to sort of build their family life, particularly civilizations, around marriage. And given that kind of pattern, you know, what kinds of conclusions can we draw about the value today of forging strong, stable families, not just for ourselves and for our kids, but for our communities and for the civilization at large?
In terms of, and I'm Prusa, just let me know, good news, I have another 2 minutes with you if you can hang on. I know you have to go real soon, but I just want to get this in because it's so important. First of all, before we let you go, where do we get the book, Get Married?
Amazon's great, and you can get it also at Barnes & Noble and bradwilcox.com.
Okay, now do you think, given this book and other information that's out there, because this isn't, again, your first rodeo, there's tons of research out there, that sooner or later people are going to start waking up and realize that getting married, that this is a good thing, not a bad thing, and that making a commitment, sacrificing, this is how you're going to be truly happy, not keeping it all to yourself. Do you think we're getting to that point? Are people starting to wake up?
The short term, I think, is still pretty bleak. There's just so many forces in my social media that orient us away from, you know, forging strong civil marriages. But I think the science is very strong here, and we are some subcultures, including, you know, religious ones, have gotten this myth and are internalizing it and becoming much more intentional about how they're approaching not only dating, but also equipping couples who are already married to flourish. And one ministry, for example, is Communio, which is doing a great job with Catholic and Protestant churches across the U.S.
So I would think that this would be, speaking of Catholic and Protestant churches, something that might be good to share in marriage prep or engaged encounters and things like that. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's helpful for people to know that not only is marriage really important for them and for their kids, but to also know that there are things that they can do to strengthen their marriage. So in my book, for instance, I talk about the importance of communion. And one example of that is regular date nights. Couples who have regular date nights are much happier and less prone to divorce. I talk also about the importance of cash, especially having a husband who is a stable, reliable breadwinner. That's also a huge predictor of avoiding divorce court. So these are some of the kinds of things that pre-canon could stress. And, of course, most importantly in that context, what my research shows is that folks who attend church are about 30 to 50% less likely to end up getting divorced.
Yeah. Brad, great work. Thank you so much for your courage in putting this out there continually. The book is Get Married, Why Americans Must Defy the Elites, Forge Strong Families, and Save Civilization by Brad Wilcox. We'll be right back.
Steve Ray here. Next year's a jubilee year, and we're going to celebrate it in Rome. But not only Rome. This is our Saints and Shrines of Italy pilgrimage, and joining us is our good friend Teresa Tomeo.
Yes, Steve, fantastico. Walking through the holy doors, immersing ourselves in the deeply Catholic culture of Italy. I'll be joining you and Janet in Florence and Assisi.
Join us this May for the Jubilee year from Milan to Florence and much more all the way to Rome.
Find the Ave Maria Radio travel tab at avemariaradio.net.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
I went to Las Vegas years and years ago for one of these cable shows. And I was shocked to see all these old ladies in their 70s and 80s getting off that plane, running for a slot machine. You don't have a chance to win. They're all fixed. I know, my uncle used to have slot machines.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Do you have a teenager at home who's full of potential? Too often the world is telling you to be content with mediocrity instead of raising respectful and responsible young adults with strong character. Hi, everybody. I'm Dr. Ray. If you need some help, not only to navigate those teen years, but to really enjoy them, check out my book, Standing Strong, Good Discipline Makes Great Teens, as well as my other books, on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
I told him about the woman who came to me and said her two children hadn't spoken to each other for 2 years. Their grandma died, and she was very wealthy. She left half to each one. She said they're arguing over a commode. She said it's inlaid. Can you imagine being in hell and somebody saying to you, what are you here for?
WTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
From the archives, this
is the wisdom of Mother Angelica.
The Eucharist is the one presence of Jesus that's real. It is the presence of God he promised to leave. I will not leave you orphans. There is no comparison between the other presences of God. The presence of God is in his word. The presence of God is in me and you, or you would dissolve into nothingness. The presence of God is in creation, in the air we breathe. But when that priest says, this is my body and this is my blood, that is the real presence of God. Body, blood, soul, and divinity. It is Jesus himself, alive.
For more about Mother Angelica, visit EWTNRC.com.
Hello, my name is Francesca.
Hello, my name is Liliana.
And we're missing you too, and Teresa.
You're listening to the best of Catholic Connection with Teresa Tamio.
Looking back, a lot of different changes, and not all for the good in terms of the culture of death. And earlier this month, a very good article penned on Catholic World Report, Assessing and Resisting the Continued Growth of the Culture of Death, and it was written by our guest this morning, and we're happy to have him on. And we are going to be talking about this in detail, and we welcome to the program Mark Bradford, who's a fellow for persons with intellectual and developmental disabilities at the Word on Fire Institute. Mark, thanks for joining us. Happy Advent.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for inviting me in. Happy Advent to you as well.
All right, so let's talk about the article. It was a very detailed, but at the same time broad in terms of kind of an overview of what's going on. Why did you decide to pen this piece, Mark? What was concerning you? What was on your heart when you sat down to write it?
I think, Teresa, I think it's just the general trend in our culture. You know, after the election on November 5th, abortion was on the ballot again, as we know, after the Dobbs decision, the decision whether or not to allow abortion has been relegated to the states, and we've not been doing too well in the states. I think, what were there, something like 10 states where abortion was on the ballot once again, and there were only three states. Thankfully, there were three states that voted to not allow abortion, but in each case, the margin of victory was just too narrow. You know, in Florida, where there was a proposed constitutional amendment that would allow abortion, a majority of the vote still won in favor of placing the constitutional amendment in the Florida state constitution that would allow abortion. I don't remember the number specifically now, but I think it was like 57%, and they needed 60% to pass. So still, you had a majority vote there in favor of abortion. We had the physician-assisted suicide decision on the ballot in West Virginia, I believe it was, and it was held back in West Virginia, but again, by a very, very narrow vote. So, you know, as much as we'd like to think that we have a growing sentiment in favor of life in this country, I think we're hanging on by the skin of our teeth. And in most of the states where that decision has been turned over to the states, abortion has been accepted, unfortunately. And actually, the abortion statistics are, from what I've read anyway, even a bit higher than they were in 1920 prior to the Dobbs decision. So that was the impetus. Originally, this was like 2,800 words. I started writing and couldn't stop. And we got it down to 1,200 or so here. But just to raise, again, to raise awareness of the issue that we're facing.
Yeah, you make some excellent points. And even if you look at where people were victorious in terms of the life issues, if you break it down, a lot of the basis where it had to do with people still want abortion. They just don't want it through 9 months of pregnancy, and they don't want to pay for it. Those are two issues. So we have a lot of education to do. So, and especially, we haven't even gotten into a physician-assisted suicide, but let's start with the abortion issue. A lot of it, I think, has to do with the lack of catechesis over the last several decades, especially in the church, considering the large body of Catholics we still have in this country.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, it's just, I think it's hard to really narrow down all the factors that are at play here in the culture. It just certainly seems that the culture of death is on the ascendancy again, in a way that John Paul II, when he first coined those terms back in the 1990s, put it. Probably might, well, maybe wouldn't have even dreamed ever. Maybe he did. I don't know. Maybe that's why his cry was so loud and so present back then. But yeah, we certainly are facing a culture where abortion is just a given, I think. not just in our country, but across the Western world. And the church has not been doing as good of a job as it should in many ways. But I think you're right, Teresa. I think that we're just not doing as effective of a job as we should in Catholic schools and in, you know, Christian formation programs in parishes to really drill down on these issues as we should.
Do first with the abortion issue, do you think differently, Mark, to get the message across?
Well, you know, I think the March for Life and the youth present at the March for Life has been phenomenal. I saw that Jeannie Mancini, who hasn't for years, has resigned that position and turned it over to someone else, but very glad to see that the March for Life is still going. I think now that the decision is down to the states, we need to really work at the state level politically, but I think we need to keep that youth sentiment going. You know, I mentioned in the article, I think it was in this final version, toward the end, that the place where we really have to focus is our families. Too often, I think families expect the church to assume responsibility for educating children. And I think that first formation at a young and tender age in the family, with families themselves accepting the gift of life into their homes, welcoming it, as you mentioned, the Fellow for Persons with Intellectual and Developmental Disabilities for the Word on Fire Institute, and we know that prenatal diagnosis and abortion is a huge issue, and it's an issue as much as we might want to acknowledge it, and we don't really have statistics to back this up other than anecdotal testimonies from people, but, you know, there are people even in the church who are facing a prenatal diagnosis that might be tempted or make the decision to abort a child. So I think even back as far as marriage prep, I'm saying more and more frequently now, I think in marriage prep, we even have to get into the issues where we talk about children being a gift from God. We have to reinforce the idea that all children are a gift from God. Things have to start small and grow out from there. That's why mentioned at the end of this article that it really needs to begin in the home, and then from there we need to work out into our parishes, and then our parishes build strength to have more and more of an influence in culture. And I think we just have to go back to the fundamentals again. We have to secure our understanding of the beauty of life in our homes. We have to build programs in our parishes, but not rely on the parishes to get it done. We have to work however we can to try to reinforce the goodness and the beauty of all human life.
Yeah, I'm just quoting a lot toward the end of your article. Where is the hope? It is in being attentive to our children, distancing them from the corrupting cultural influences that enter our homes through technology, and nurturing them in faith through good education and prayer. That is the greatest weapon in the battle against the culture of death, because it starts with the domestic church, correct?
That's right. That's exactly right.
Yeah. We're talking with Mark Bradford, and Mark is a fellow for persons with intellectual and developmental disabilities at the Word on Fire Institute, and talking about this beautiful article that was posted earlier this month that he wrote and penned for our friends at Catholic World Report, catholicworldreport.com, Assessing and Resisting the Continued Growth of the Culture of Death. We will put a link to it on our archives at avemariaradio.net. Just go to that website and Catholic Connection. Another thing that is extremely alarming, and for those of us, my station is based out of southeastern Michigan, syndicated through EWTN, but we're in southeastern Michigan, right across from Canada. And we're seeing this not only in Canada, but we're seeing a push for this in the United States, physician-assisted suicide and euthanasia. It's from one end to the other where this extreme about death is affecting us, correct?
That's exactly right. You know, I've said often that abortion and euthanasia are two sides of the same coin. We know that John Paul II, often when he spoke about abortion, he included euthanasia or physician-assisted. Well, he didn't really mention physician-assisted suicide. I think he usually used the term euthanasia, and everyone has to understand the distinction there. I think, you know, euthanasia is actively killing someone, and physician-assisted suicide, or what they're calling it now in Canada, medical assistance in dying or medical aid in dying, is when a physician or medical professional provides the tools or the means by which someone can kill themselves. Really, it's interesting that many people approve of medical assistance in dying in terms of providing people the ability or the drugs to kill themselves, but they oppose the idea of euthanasia, interestingly, when really it results in the same thing. People just don't want to do it themselves, I guess. So, yeah, it's a huge and growing problem across the world. We have physician-assisted suicide now, I think, is legal in 10 states in the United States. Mm-hmm. And there are organizations, advocacy organizations, that are constantly pushing for a broadening of the accessibility of these laws that will allow people either to kill themselves or allow them to request death from a medical professional. Huge problem, growing problem. But again, in the same breath, we can talk about abortion and physician-assisted suicide, because in both cases, it's devaluing lives that we don't see as having the worth or the dignity to live. Or even by self-choice. In the case of euthanasia, physician-assisted suicide, it's one choosing that for themselves. So what are the reasons that someone is making that choice? Why would someone be driven to the point where they would choose to either kill themselves or ask someone to kill them?
We have to get to the root causes and beyond the emotions associated with this that the media play on so well and so often. More with Mark Bradford when we come back. We're talking about his very powerful article, very well documented and very important, Assessing and Resisting the Continued Growth of the Culture of Death. And this is posted just recently on Catholic World Report. Again, we'll put a link to it on the archive. More with Mark when we come back. Stay tuned.
The Word became flesh to redeem us from our sinful state, the Catechism tells us, and reconcile us to God. We lived in darkness and needed a great light. We were prisoners and we needed to be freed. In such a miserable state, we needed a divine human mediator to descend from heaven. Through Jesus' suffering and death, we learned how much God loved us. For divinity to descend to humanity, and humanity in the poorest circumstances, demanded great love and great sacrifice and great humility. It also gave us a great role model whom we could and should imitate on our life's journey. Jesus is the embodiment of the Beatitudes and the norm of the new law. He commanded us to love one another as I have loved you. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
It's time for Family Man with Dr. Gregory Popchak.
Most parents would like to raise generous kids, but where do you start? Well, authentic generosity doesn't start with serving strangers. It starts with looking for little ways families can make each other's lives easier at home. Start a new habit in your family. Make it a rule that everyone should look for one way to leave a room better than they found it. It doesn't matter who left the coat off the hook or who left the toy on the floor. If you see it, deal with it. The important point is, good teams don't bicker about whose job something is because everybody on the team is just committed to giving their all to get the job done. Practicing generous service at home is one of the most important things Catholic families can do. To discover more ways your family can celebrate the liturgy of domestic church life, check out the newest editions of Parenting with Grace and visit CatholicCounselors.com. Dr. Greg Popchak, but you can call me Family Man.
To discover more ways faith can enrich your life, visit CatholicCounselors.com.
Assessing and resisting the continued growth of the culture of death. Big piece on the Catholic World Report. Check it out, CatholicWorldReport.com. Mark Bradford with Word on Fire wrote this article. So, Mark, let me ask you. I know you work with the Work on Fire Institute, and it's a very obviously beautiful opportunity to do so much good and to work with someone like Bishop Barron, who just gets it and is such a good communicator. He's just really, really good at what he does. Just an excellent bishop as well, obviously very solid. But in terms of your own personal story, just a little bit, I always like to find out what leads people to do what they do, because this is such a huge issue and so important for our time right now. How did you get involved in this type of work?
Yeah, we have a son with Down syndrome, which is, you know, the most direct answer to the question, I think. He's 23 years old now and certainly aware of the threats to people who are prenatally diagnosed with Down syndrome or other intellectual or developmental disabilities. I worked at the National Catholic Bioethics Center for 7 or 8 years with John Huss. I was the executive vice president there and faced many of these issues there. They had the opportunity at one point to meet the director of the Jerome Lejeune Foundation in Paris, whose name was Thierry de la Villejugu, who's retired now. But they were in the process of doing some research to see if they could open a sort of an outpost of the foundation in the U.S. And a great conversation with him, and ended up doing that for him in 2012, opening the Jerome Lejeune Foundation here. moved on from that at this point, but that also gave me more of an opportunity to focus on these issues. And then a friend of mine actually sent the article. It was an article in Crux magazine that was advertising this fellowship with the Word on Fire Institute. And at that point, Jerome Lejeune's name was attached to it. And it took me about 2 minutes to decide whether or not I would apply for it. And I did. And so that's really put me into a real direct opportunity to deal with these issues on a great platform with the incredible support of Bishop Barron and Father Steve Bruno, who is our CEO, and whose idea it really was to start this fellowship with Word on Fire, because they realized two things. They realized that there was this tremendous threat to people who were prenatally diagnosed. And they also realized that there really was not enough awareness, I guess you could say, in the church, and a willingness in the church to engage people with disabilities in parish ministry and really find a place of welcoming and belonging in parishes for them. So those are that's what brought me here. And I'm focusing a lot on these issues over the last, as I said, since the election especially, because, you know, Teresa, you just look at these numbers and your heart breaks to think of where we're headed here. It's just become so commonplace to accept abortion, to talk about it freely, and now more and more to accept this idea that we can just kill people or we can just kill ourselves if we think we're no longer living a life that we see as valuable, and talk about it so freely and so openly as if it's just an accepted part of the culture. We have to stop the willingness for people to feel like they can just say those things. You know, it's like the transgender issues and what many people are saying in that area. Now, we can't just passively stand by when someone presents us with these things as a good or their non-reality. You know, we have to confront it with the reality that we know, that we believe is a truth that comes to us from God Himself.
Right.
We're
right.
A witness in the culture. We have to be bold about it.
And isn't it utterly amazing how those who say that they're so inclusive and so open-minded and want such a difference of opinion, how they cancel people who are different than themselves or disagree with them, and in this case are pushing for the killing of people who may be different from them, or anybody at all, but in terms of, no, we don't want people around, but we're so open-minded, we just want it, but we'll just kill them, it's easier.
Yeah, it's really true. And you know, in the Netherlands, and you mentioned in Canada now too, that more and more the situation, I think, you know, in the Netherlands, there was a study Kingston University did a while back, and it was cases of individuals with intellectual developmental disabilities, autism and some intellectual disabilities, that had requested death in the Netherlands. And in 77% of those cases, loneliness and isolation was listed as a factor that they said was their unbearable suffering. And doctors claimed that there wasn't any prospect of improvement in that. You know, And that is just so stunning to me. You know, people are asking to die with disabilities because they're lonely and they're experiencing isolation, both of which we know are factors in the mental health crisis we have in this country, which is impacting the disabled community much more severely than it is the typical community. But that's their unbearable suffering, and doctors are allowing people to kill themselves because they're lonely. They feel isolated, and they say there's no solution for that. Well, the solution for that, obviously, is community, and that's such a valuable place for the church to be of service to people with intellectual and developmental disabilities and all people. You know, be the community that people need so they see that their lives have value, right?
Yes, absolutely. And it has become so commonplace. I was telling you during the break that I was sharing a story with someone you know well, Father Tad Pacholczyk, another amazing pro-life warrior. My husband and I were on a cruise earlier this year, and we were waiting to go into dinner, and we were having a brief glass of wine, and we were sat down, and we talked to this very nice woman. She's from Canada. And I said, oh, well, we're from Michigan. We're very close to you. She's from Ontario. And she starts talking about she's, you know, retired and she's single and, you know, divorced and she likes to travel. She was a very pleasant woman, very nice. And all of a sudden, out of the blue, she says, I'm so glad that we have assisted suicide in Florida because I get really old. I can kill myself and not be a burden to my son. It's like, what? I mean, like, so commonplace. And you're having a cocktail. All of a sudden, she talks about killing herself.
Yeah. Yeah. It's stunning. It's really stunning. You know, after I finish this conversation, I'm jumping into another one. We're doing an incarnation series now at the Word on Fire Institute, and then involved in one of those conversations this morning. And I've been, you know, so often I understand the incarnation from where Jesus is not. you know, sort of define it like an artist would define the negative space, you know, and you see this huge dark hole, just this huge dark hole, and people who are in that kind of darkness can't even see it themselves. They don't know they're there. You know, they don't see the light. They don't see the hope that is there in the next life or in this life, but they can't even see it in the next life, right? They think that their lives no longer have meaning. They no longer have value. Or they think that they'll get to the point, as you just said, where their life doesn't have value and they don't want to be a burden to anyone. So, okay, they'll just die. We can just end it, and then we won't make anyone else suffer because of us. And as you said also during the break, as Catholics, we've lost the sense of the value of suffering. John Paul II showed us that so beautifully, just so beautifully, to the end of his life, right?
And there's no understanding of what the Church teaches, or very little understanding, even among Catholics, of what the Church actually teaches on suffering, as opposed to what the media claim, the Church and others who are against euthanasia-assisted suicide. Mark, thank you so much for your work. God bless you. Really appreciate it. When can we expect to see more writing from you? Any articles coming out in the near future?
Yeah, there'll be two coming out. I have one coming out, I think, December 23rd at wordonfire.org. And then another one coming out soon after that. I'm writing all the time. So,
good for you. We need it. I appreciate it. You're very, very informed, well-informed, and appreciate your personal story behind it as well. Assessing and Resisting the Continued Growth of the Culture of Death. Check out the article from Mark Bradford with Word on Fire Institute at the Catholic World Report. And also, you can always check out the great work of Mark and the rest of the team at Word on Fire. Do such a great job of evangelization. And we need to evangelize, too. We need to get out there and write and speak and post. We all have a platform. If you have a Facebook page, you have a platform. If you're alive, you have a platform. Use it to promote life. We need it. We'll be right back.
"60 Seconds with Father Mitch Pacwa.
The state has responsibility to orient things, but they can't take over the rights of the family, like in China, to have one child and that's it. It's a disaster over there. How many tens of millions of abortions have gone on? And one of the things that, as a result of that, is because of the preference to have boy children rather than girls, you have, for every 1,000 boys, there are 850 girls. This is a great imbalance. Same thing is going on in northern India. So this is where the government cannot take away the primary and inalienable responsibility of married couples and families. And they cannot employ methods which fail to respect the person and fundamental human rights. Beginning with the right to life, the government cannot force you to kill innocent human beings and still be a humanistic government. It's an evil government.
The people you know and trust are on EWTN.
Dr. Ray Guarendi.
When I've had enough. I ask parents, when do you decide to discipline? One of the most common answers is, when I've had enough. If discipline is designed to teach, then we need to discipline before we've had enough. We need to discipline because the behavior's wrong, not because emotionally it's pushed us to our edge. Besides, when you get to when you've had enough, you're much more likely to yell and scream and say things that you have to go to confession for. So, the suggestion is, discipline out of principle, not emotion. Principle means because it needs discipline, and I'm going to do it when I'm calm. Emotion means I'm going to be moved to do it just because I'm mad.
You're listening to the best of Catholic Connection with Teresa Tamio.
Sometimes it's easy to get caught up with the negativity out there, but there are a lot of good news stories to report. And great to have Matt Lamb back on with us. He's the associate editor of the College Fix. We're going to look at some of those positive news stories. But Matt, for those, I know many people are familiar with the College Fix, but give us kind of a summary of what the College Fix is and what it's all about. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Absolutely. So the College Fix is a center-right higher education news site, and we train students who want to go into journalism or students who are, to use a Catholic term, discerning, perhaps working in journalism or media. We pay them to write for us, and they write stories about higher education issues, focusing on getting facts and comments, but certainly issues of concern to faithful Catholics, Protestants, conservatives, libertarians, such as pro-life, free speech issues on campus, academic publishing integrity, plagiarism scandals, which unfortunately a lot of us are now familiar with, and a lot of those topics that touch on university life, student loans, et cetera. And then we also help fund our high-quality students to do paid fellowships at places like Washington Examiner, EWTN, Fox News, and other conservative and mainstream publications.
What I think is so amazing, in addition to just the general great news reporting that you do, looking at the education system, especially higher education, as you just mentioned, is, and this is near and dear to my heart, and we spoke about this before, training young journalists, Matt, because what we're seeing at the college level at a lot of these secular universities is they're not training them to be journalists, they're training them to be activists and advocates. And this is why we see so much of this showing up. I don't know if you saw the report that came out a couple of weeks ago, but I discussed it in the first hour of my show, where a former, well, he stepped down from the LA Times, and he was very blatant and went all over the networks, especially the legacy media, including MSNBC, saying that this is no time for balance. I said, what? He actually said those words. This is no time for balance. And he's an editor, or a former editor. He sees nothing wrong with being all pro-left all the time because of his feelings for particular politicians. No time for balance. And this is an editor. This is the attitude out there among many of these so-called, and I don't think they're mainstream, but you know, the legacy media. And that's why what you're doing is so important.
Thank you. I hadn't seen that, but I've certainly seen that argument made that, you know, we can't be objective in the face of, you know, Donald Trump, or I'm sure 10 years ago, Mitt Romney, or whatever the next threat will be in a couple of years. So that those comments don't surprise me. And that's why, even though most of our students are certainly conservative, on the conservative spectrum, I do really try to instill in them to make sure to get, you know, a variety of viewpoints on issues, to really make sure they're using the primary source document. And I think especially, you know, as a Catholic, just making sure that everyone gets the justice that they deserve. And even a professor that maybe promotes, you know, critical race theory or some other view that we may not agree with, we do want to make sure to still treat them as human beings and try our best to accurately portray their viewpoint, and then people can make up their own opinions about if what they're saying makes sense.
What a concept, doing actual journalism. Well, I appreciate it, and I'm so glad that you're working with those young people, because that means if they're placed, and maybe some of them, if they have really, really thick skin, could be placed in the secular media, it would be rough, but they could make a huge difference. Okay, let's get to the good news stories. Let's start with Franciscan University, and, well, they do so much good, but they're giving us a lot of priests, correct?
Correct. So there was not an exact number, but when we covered this several months ago, the numbers were a couple hundred. And I mean, the fact that we came across this story because, you know, seeing so many priests from Franciscan University, and I actually have to claim, not just for Franciscan, but for my diocese here, the Diocese of Gary, we interviewed a priest who grew up around here in Indiana, and then ended entering the Third Order Franciscans, which do run Franciscan University, but they produce a lot of priests as well as religious sisters and brothers for a variety of orders and dioceses.
Obviously, they teach the faith so well, but what do you think it is? Is their secret is that these young men take the leap to go into the seminary, in addition to obviously learning so much about their faith at Franciscan and about life?
Civic program. It's called the Priestly Discernment Program, I think. And so they sort of live almost like they're in a seminary. So there's daily mass, adoration, holy hour, liturgy of the hours, and it's actually based off the four pillars of formation from the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, and there's also a fifth column, which the university calls fraternal formation, basically learning how to live a community life and brotherhood, according to the school. So they basically let the students try out you know, giving them a taste of what seminary is like, as well as the university, I think, in general, creates a good environment for discernment and being surrounded by other people who are also serious about their faith. And I think that certainly contributes to their success.
Okay, moving on to Clemson, the story about expanding capitalism, Capitalism Institute with a $25 million donation.
Yeah, so the Clemson University has the Institute for the Study of Capitalism, and the Snow family recently gave $25 million to expand this program. This is a great opportunity for Clemson students to learn about the moral foundations of capitalism, the core principles and institutions, according to the school. And Bradley Thompson, who actually directs the program and also teaches political philosophy, said he was shocked but delighted by this large donation. So this Capitalism Institute has a program that currently has about 40 students a year, and now it will be allowed to have 80 students a year because this money will allow them to expand. And, this program isn't just about, like, learning just free market is the greatest thing ever and just, like, purely economics, but I think there's a lot of, like, moral dimensions to it. There's a lot of reading of the classics. And I think it's a great way, it seems, for students to get a sense of the benefits of capitalism and the foundations of a free society.
Well, I mean, this ties into the stories that continue to make news about Luigi Mangione. And there was a story that broke, and I'm sure you saw it, being that this is your thing, looking at college education, where some people connected to him who know Mangione say that he may have been radicalized by college professors. So this understanding of giving students a full view of how the world works in certain situations, it has such an impact on them.
I think so, and just connected to what we're talking about with Franciscan, I think that's why we're seeing an interest in schools, whether they're explicitly Catholic, explicitly Protestant, or, for example, the University at Austin, where they do focus on actually reading things and learning how the world works. For example, the University at Austin, just got to mention, they actually have a course where they read the writings of Joseph Goebbels, who was Hitler's chief propagandist. I think they read the readings of, like, Lenin. And so sometimes you actually do need to read these writings of evil people to learn how they think, so we can spot it, so that we can stop evil in our current society.
What's the website for The College Fix, Matt?
TheCollegeFix.com, and we're on social media under all those that same name.
All right, we'll be right back. More with Matt Lamb when we come back. Stay tuned.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com.
Christ is the answer with Father John Ricardo.
I tell oftentimes an experience that I had at Divine Child when I was a young priest, 1 year ordained. First time I ever really saw the power of the Blessed Sacrament. And we simply exposed the Blessed Sacrament at the end of Mass one night. I encouraged people. I said, you know what, we've been in the habit of praying over people after Mass. I said, we're not going to do that this week. I'm just going to invite people to come on up and pray if they want to pray. And I put the Blessed Sacrament on the altar. I kneeled down. As I kneeled down, the church is in the sanctuary, the whole church. And as I'm looking at this, and I'm looking at the people there, and I'm looking at Jesus under the appearance of bread there, I saw the Lord standing on the altar. And he's just standing there looking out at all the people. And then at a certain point, he turned towards me, and he just bowed. And he says, don't you see how easy this is? You don't have to do anything. You just have to put me out. You put me out, and I will work.
You're listening to Ave Maria Radio, which survives only through the generosity of our listeners. To help spread Ave Maria Radio, become a member by calling 877-288-1077 or visit avemariaradio.net.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you automatically own shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria Mutual Funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
You're listening to the best of Catholic Connection with Teresa Tamio.
CollegeFix.com is a great publication that not only takes a look at what's happening positively on college campuses with an emphasis on conservative issues and Catholic issues, but also trains young journalists, which to me is just as important because we have to get the media back to doing their jobs, not asking them to be one way or the other, just do your job. All right. So we're talking about big stories of 2024, and one of the ones, and I know that Matt is all too familiar with this very positive story, and we're highlighting positive things that have been happening in college education. UNC Chapel Hill, earlier this year, with all the campus protests going on regarding pro-Palestinian, anti-Israel protests, there were some young men, fraternity brothers, at UNC Chapel Hill that captured the hearts and the attention of the nation with their act of patriotism. They would not let the protesters go after the flag. And we have a clip, a short clip, my wonderful producer Andrew pulled it, of these students receiving one of the annual Patriot Awards at a big celebration recently that's put on every year by Fox Nation. So this is students Guillermo Estrada and Alex Jones accepting the award for courage during the Patriot Awards, honoring the fraternity for holding up the American flag as pro-Palestinian protesters tried to replace the Stars and Stripes with a Palestinian flag. Here's what they had to say at the award ceremony recently.
My grandfather comes from eastern North Carolina. He's a small farm town boy. And being up here in, you know, this stage is something that he never would have dreamed in his entire life for his grandson. And to me, that's really what not only this flag, but this entire nation represents. And for me, that's why, you know, I acted on that day.
We didn't hesitate when we saw our flag being torn back down because this flag represents the beacon of hope that called my parents to this great country 20 years ago. The promise of liberty and prosperity that makes America a light to the world, that is what that flag represents. And to those that still, for some reason, question the meaning and importance of the flag, I invite you to sit down with families like mine from Goldsboro, North Carolina, family like Alex's, and to listen to truly what the red, white, and blue truly means to us. Once again, once again, on behalf of the Kappa Chapter of Pi Kappa Phi at UNC Chapel Hill and UNC's proud Greek community, we thank you for this honor. Go Heels!
Wow. Thank you, senators. That's what I thought, Matt, when I heard them speak. So articulate and such proud American men. Your thoughts? That was quite a moment, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's absolutely great. You know, sometimes I'm sure at the College Fix, we cover a lot of the depressing stories, a lot of the stories from the encampment, that it's great to hear people speak so positively about the country, and that these men defended the American flag from protesters. And you know, they also have good leadership at UNC. Chancellor Lee Roberts, he led, you know, a bunch of police to, back in the spring to restore the American flag and to stand up against the mob.
Yeah, I remember that. That was a great story. Talking with Matt Lamb, associate editor of the College Fix at collegefix.com. Now, here's something else, and you gave me a list of so many really good positive stories that you've covered in the past year for 2024. You're not alone. Pro Cop Cafe owner bullied off Boise State campus, celebrates $4 million verdict. Tell us about that.
So Sarah Fendley owned a pro-police cafe that operated at Boise State's campus in Idaho. And several years ago, there was some trouble because she was supporting the police. And essentially, the university bullied her off campus. If it sounds familiar, it's very similar to what happened to the Gibson Bakery in Ohio when Oberlin administrators worked with students to harass a local institution, a bakery that had, you know, been in the town for years, had worked with the university. And so the store is sort of, it's tough to run a business when you have to do a lawsuit and all these problems, but apparently it's still going, and she won the $4 million verdict earlier this year.
Wow, that's awesome. So Matt, in terms of the stories, what were your favorite ones, the most positive stories for you as the associate editor of the College Fix for 2024?
Wow, that's tough to pick. It's definitely great to see people like Sarah Fenley win this $4 million lawsuit. I also liked covering the Franciscan University story that we talked about. We've done several stories actually about small Catholic colleges producing priests. And so those are certainly some ones I really like. Another thing I would really like to focus on is, I think we talked about this last time, but, you know, the NIH funding all of these sort of woke studies. And so positive, I like it, I guess, in the sense of that perhaps when Trump comes in and RFK Jr. comes in, they can stop a lot of these projects that we're wasting money on, and it doesn't really do anything to help improve health outcomes.
Matt, thank you. Wishing you a happy new year, and thank you so much for what you do at the College Fix, thecollegefix.com. Matt Lamb is the associate editor.
You've been listening to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo. Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio, and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Our producer is Andrew Kruczek. For copies of this program or for more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net. Thanks for listening, and join us next time for another edition of Catholic Connection.